Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Text Number 18. This chapter is entitled Explanation of the Vedic Path. And here Lord Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. Yato Nivarteta Vimucheta Tata Esha Dharmo Nirnam Shema Shoka Moha Paya Paha Paya Paha Yato Yato Navarteta Yato Yato Navarteta Vimucheta Tatastata Vimucheta Tatastata Esha Dharmo Nirnam Kshema Esha Dharmo Nirnam Kshema Shoka Moha Paya Paha Shoka Moha Paya Paha Yato Yato Navarteta Vimucheta Tatastata Esha Dharmo Nirnam Kshema Shoka Moha Paya Paha Yato Yato Nivarteta Mucheta Tatastara Esha Dharma Nyam Kshema Shoka Maya Baya Paha Yato Yato Nivarteta Mucheta Tatastara Esha Dharma Mayamena Shoka Moha Paya Paha. Anyone else? Okay. Transliterations. Yata Yata. From whatever. Navarteta. One desists. One desists. Vimucheta. He becomes liberated. Ta-ta-ta-ta. From that. Esha. This. Dharma. The system of religion. Nirnanam. For humans. Shema. The path of auspiciousness. Shoka. Suffering. Moha. Delusion. Baya. And fear. Apaha. Which takes away. Translation. By refraining from a particular sinful or materialistic activity, one becomes freed from its bondage. Such renunciation is the basis of religious and auspicious life for human beings and drives away all suffering, illusion, and fear. Translation again, please repeat. By refraining from a particular sinful or materialistic activity, one becomes freed from its bondage. Such renunciation is the basis of religious and auspicious life for human beings and drives away all suffering, illusion, and fear. Purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, chapter 6, verse 220, it is stated, Mahaprabhura patakanera vairaga pradhanam yaha deki pritahana gaura bhagavan. Quote, renunciation is the basic principle sustaining the lives of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. Seeing this renunciation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is extremely satisfied. Unquote. Because of false ego, one considers oneself to be the proprietor and enjoyer of one's activities. Actually, Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, is the proprietor and enjoyer of all of our activities. Recognition of this fact in Krishna consciousness leads one to real renunciation. Every human being should perform his prescribed duty as an offering to the Supreme Lord. Then there will be no possibility of material entanglement. Lord Krishna clearly explains in Bhagavad Gita that prescribed duties performed as an offering to the Lord award liberation from material bondage. Sinful activities cannot be offered to the Lord, but must be given up altogether. In effect, the distinction between piety and sin is made so that the living entities will become pious and eligible to surrender to the Supreme Lord. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 28, Yesham Tantakatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvandva Mohanir Mukta Pachante Mam Vritavritaha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, and who are freed from the duality of delusion, engage themselves in my service with determination. Unquote. By thorough piety, one's life becomes auspicious and freed from lamentation, illusion, and fear. And one can then take to the path of Krishna consciousness. I'll read this sentence one more time. It's the last sentence of the purport. By thorough piety, one's life becomes auspicious and freed from lamentation, illusion, and fear. And one can then take to the path of Krishna consciousness. Boy, what a beautiful thought, to become free from lamentation, illusion, and fear.
Where do I sign up?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We made it, just don't offend anyone.
Well, that's why I'm here, to learn from you. Om Ganatamarantasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshama Tanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtang Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rubhakadama Nadati Svapadantikam Bandayam Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Palakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsta Shri Rupam Sakurachatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitang Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakangitamuscha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'll read the translation again. By refraining from a particular sinful or materialistic activity, one becomes freed from its bondage. Such renunciation is the basis of religious and auspicious life for human beings and drives away all suffering, illusion, and fear. So before beginning this sacred discussion about Srimad Bhagavatam, I just want to take the opportunity to welcome all the devotees, both here and long distance, to the Srimad Bhagavatam class here. I'm especially grateful for myself because by this act of coming together, either physically or through our hearing, we're able to give strength to each other to continue this process of Krishna consciousness. I know myself, without these devotees coming together and performing this this renunciation, I would not be able to continue in my Krishna consciousness. Exactly. This is like, I don't know if anyone heard that, but Patita Bhavana just interjected that we've renounced our suffering. And it reminds me how what Srila Prabhupada used the analogy, if you go into a bank and you take out a gun and you say to the teller, give me all the money, you're a thief, right? And if you walk into the bank and you say, I renounce all this money, you're a madman, you're also a thief, right? So nothing belongs to us, everything belongs to Krishna. And it is such a wonderful process. I just think it was reflecting during the morning program how wonderful the way to start the day, coming together and engaging in kirtan, especially in kirtan, seems to capture everyone's heart. Have you ever noticed, it seems like whenever you engage together in kirtan, there always seems to come to a certain point in the kirtan where all of a sudden everything starts becoming like the spontaneous flowing. I don't know how quite to describe it, but have you experienced that? Just you're starting out at the beginning and it's kind of formal and we're just kind of warming up. And all of a sudden it just kind of clicks and everyone just starts becoming ecstatic. Almost like, you know, in New Vrindavan we have cows and, you know, before you milk the cow, you have to put warm water on the udders. And then after a while, after the udders warm up, then the milk starts to flow. So it's like the same way. And coming together, we begin to taste that milk of Krishna consciousness, you know, that liquid religiosity. And I was also reflecting and looking at the beautiful forms of Sri Shivada Kalachandri. Actually, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think these are the only deities in the world where Radha and Krishna were Kalachandri. That name Kalachandri, it ends with an E, like an E sound, which automatically, that's what I wanted to ask you. What does Kalachandri mean? Yeah? Kishore Kishori, right. So there's not too many, right? But there's Kalachandri, Kishore Kishori, just kind of makes you automatically smile. Right? But I was remembering a verse from the 10th canto. Yadigatam yadiduram katam krishno vana shobekshanayatam aham purvam aham purvam iti samprishi re mure. This is from the 10th canto, where it's described that sometimes Krishna, he would go to a distant place to see the beauty of the forest. Then all the boys would run to accompany him. Each one would be saying, I will touch Krishna first. No, I will touch Krishna first. In this way, they enjoyed life by repeatedly touching Krishna. So in this way, in this process of coming together and hearing, just simply by hearing about Krishna, we are also experiencing that same transcendental bliss. We can experience the same transcendental bliss the coward boys experience by touching the feet of Krishna. And it's interesting that, you know, when the coward boys come to touch Krishna's feet, not all of them touch his feet at the same time. Sometimes they touch his feet on the left side. Sometimes they touch his feet on the right side. They touch in different places. So just like devotees, we're all individuals. And we all have Krishna's given us all unique talents. Srila Prabhupada said to use our talents in Krishna's service becomes the perfection of our life. To be able to dovetail that and make that as an offering. That's why it explains here in this verse, in this purport. It alludes to the... this purport is very glorious because it has so many wonderful references to Bhagavad Gita, where it says, actually, Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is the proprietor and enjoyer of all of our activities. It's like it says in the 8th chapter, Bhoktaram janatamasam sarvalokam maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvashantam rachati. The sages, knowing me to be the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living beings, achieve peace from the pangs, you know, material miseries. It's interesting how the word pang, you know, rhymes with the word fang, you know. You look at the mouth of a poisonous snake, and these huge fangs. And so in the material existence, we're constantly being struck by the pangs of the fangs of duality and hate. Actually, it's interesting in this verse. It's quoting from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text 28. Yesha tantakatam papam. And the verse right before that, because they're both referencing similar themes, Icha Dvesha Simutena Tvandva Mohena Bharata Sarvabhutani Sangmohan Sarge Yanti Parantapa. Where Krishna tells Arjuna, he says, all living beings are born into this world bewildered by the duality of desire and hate. You know, so you think of these two fangs of the serpent of Maya as desire and hate, right? And it's interesting, like I was just reading a poem by a famous poet, Robert Frost. He says that some say the world will perish by fire, and some say it will perish by hate. But from what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, from what I know of hate, for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice. Yeah. And if we think of destruction, we also can think of not just destruction of the world, but I think in the broader sense, it's talking about destruction of relationships in this world. How, you know, it takes so much time to cultivate relationships. Relationships are like flowers. you know. And we pour water on those relationships, and they gradually grow. We give them sun, you know, and they gradually flourish. But also at the same time, it is very easy to trample a tender flower, a plant, can be easily trampled. And desire, and usually it becomes these destructions of our relationships generally come due to desire and hate. And this is described in the, these are dualities, Krishna explains in the fifth chapter. He says that one who's beyond dualities, which arise from doubts, whose mind is always active within, who's always working for the welfare of all living beings, and is freed from sin, he achieves liberation. So these dualities, you can, if we examine desire and hate, we can immediately understand that as soon as we desire something, we're setting ourselves up for a duality. Because if I'm thinking I want something, that means I don't have something. Right? So I'm immediately thrown into a state of duality, of having and not having. You know, or if I hate something, if I hate a situation, or I hate a person or a living entity, a mosquito, or, you know, we're thinking that this situation is good, and that situation is bad. So we immediately come to this point of duality. Of course, as conditioned souls, we function within duality. However, the process of Krishna consciousness is so nice is that we're able to function within that duality at the same time transcend it. Just like Mahahari Prabhu gave a very nice analogy when he gave class on Tuesday. He was speaking about how one time Srila Prabhupada was flying in an airplane, and the captain came back to sit with him. And the captain asked Srila Prabhupada, "So, may I ask you a question?" Srila Prabhupada graciously said, "Of course, yes." And he said, "If God is all good, then why is there evil in the world? How can an all good God sanction evil?" And then,
that's a very intelligent question.
A very intelligent question. And so Srila Prabhupada answered in a very intelligent way. He said that from God's perspective, there's no distinction. It's just like the sun. From the sun, everything is light, right? But the shadow is there when we turn our backs to the sun, right? So from Krishna's perspective, now it does not mean that Krishna is heartless or Krishna is so aloof from our suffering that he doesn't care. But he understands that the suffering that arises from evil, from the shadow, is almost like, is like tough love. You know, it's that tough love that helps us awaken from our slumber, from our ignorance. So in this way, a devotee perceives suffering as an opportunity to come closer to Krishna. As Queen Kunti prays, she says, how's that verse go? Vipada santu tacha jagat guru bhavato darshanam yasyat. That may those calamities come upon me again and again. Because by experiencing those calamities, O Lord, I see you. And by seeing you, I no longer experience birth and death. Of course, this is such an advanced stage. How many of us wake up in the morning thinking, "Oh Krishna, give me some calamity today"? We don't have to, actually. We don't have to. We simply have to wake up and think, "Krishna, how can I serve you today? How can I serve the devotees?" And the calamities will come again and again, regardless. Right? They naturally come on their own accord, right? Like Srila Prabhupada says, when you go, he uses the analogy, if you go into a pharmacy, you don't ask the pharmacist, "Can you please give me a pill of pain? I want a pill that will give me pain." No. The pain already comes there. Right. So of course there are. There are. Material nature is so deluding, right, and so bewildering. There are people, yes, that go through phases in their soul's journey where they experience a desire to experience suffering. But this is, of course, a very minority of people, and it is a great form of insanity. But in that sense, we are all, in one sense, we are all insane in different ways in this material world. So Krishna consciousness is the process. We're very kindly given this by the acharyas to come out of that insanity and come to our sane position. So speaking of acharyas, today is the disappearance day of Sri Ramanuja Acharya. And I was thinking it would be appropriate to speak a few words about his glorious appearance in this world. He appeared in the year of 10-1017. So this year will be the 1001 year since his appearance. And he's had a profound effect on our on the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. I mean, in fact, so many of the analogies Srila Prabhupada uses, you know, and Lord Chaitanya uses, were initiated, were spoken by Ramanujacharya. For example, he taught what's called qualified non-dualism, or that we are quantitatively different from God, but we are qualitatively the same. Whereas Shankaracharya, he taught that we are qualitatively the same and we're quantitatively the same. It's all one. Yeah. So that was the point that Ramanuja made, that if I'm all powerful, then I become separated from the power because of ignorance. And if that ignorance can overcome the all-powerful, that means that ignorance is stronger than the all-powerful. So that is beautiful. He made that point, and he was very influential. In fact, he was so influential, he incurred the envy of many of the smart caste, the Shankarites, the follower of the Shankarite school of philosophy. In fact, there's a very famous story we read in the lives of the Vaishnava saints, that he took initiation, became a student of a follower of Shankaracharya, Yadava Prakash. And even though Yadava Prakash was an impersonalist, he ended up taking studying with him. However, in his heart, he could never accept the conclusion that it's all one. And one time, he was such a studious student that he became a favorite of Yadava Prakash. And Yadava Prakash asked him to come massage him, which is, you know, is often a disciple will render some personal service to his spiritual master in that way. So as he was massaging Yadava Prakash, one of his disciples came into the room and began to ask Yadava Prakash to give his explanation of what particular verse from the morning's discourse. And Yadava Prakash took this verse and he interpreted it in such a way, in saying that the lotus eyes of the Vishnu are like, I won't even say it, it's so offensive. It's so harsh. I won't even say it. And there's no need. It was so harsh and so offensive that tears began to stream from the eyes of Ramanujacharya. And the tears fell on the body of Yadava Prakash. And Yadava Prakash, you know, noticed that Ramanuja says, why are you so upset? And he said that why don't you just take the verse as it is? Why do you have to interpret it in this offensive way? And Yadava Prakash became furious And he ended up, telling Ramanuja to leave. And ultimately, the rift became wider and wider, and eventually he told him to leave his ashram. However, Ramanuja began to set up a preaching from his home, and he began to attract many followers. And Yadava Prakash became very envious, and he wanted to kill Ramanuja. So he asked his disciples, "What do you think? Do you think this is a good plan? You know, if we let him continue like this, he's going to completely take over the influence of Shankaracharya." So they made a plan that the disciples agreed with the plan, and they were also envious. And they said, so the plan was is that they were going to go to Benares for pilgrimage, and they were going to invite Ramanuja. So they wanted to invite him, and on the way to pilgrimage, they would kill him. So, Ramanuja was trusting, and he had no reason to believe that they were going to try to kill him. So he accepted the invitation to go on pilgrimage with Yadava Prakash and his disciples. And about a day before leaving, Ramanuja's brother, I believe, asked if he could come with him. And Ramanuja agreed, so Govinda came. And while they were traveling, some of the disciples of Yadava Prakash became a little fearful. And they confided in Govinda, and they said, "You know, our Gurudev is planning to kill Ramanuja." So Govinda then took Ramanuja into the forest, and he began to explain to him what was happening, the scheme of Yadava Prakash. So at the point, Ramanuja just left the party. He left the jungle, and he continued to go back to Kanchipuram. In the meantime, Govinda came back and told the disciples of Yadava Prakash and Yadava Prakash that Ramanuja had been killed by a tiger. So Yadava Prakash was temporarily relieved. However, upon his return, he saw Ramanuja, and he realized, we better keep quiet about this, because what if Ramanuja, tells everyone that we were trying to kill him? So it was kept a secret for some time. But later on, what's amazing is that Yadava Prakash was then inspired, and I can't remember the details, but I believe he had a dream. Yadava Prakash had a dream, and he was instructed to take initiation from Ramanuja. So he went before Ramanuja, and Ramanuja accepted him. He accepted him as a disciple. And you think about that here's someone, if someone tried to kill me, right, I'd probably hold a grudge against him for the rest of my life. And every time he'd walk into the room, I would try to avoid his presence. Right? All right, Bobaboo, I'm out of here. So the fact that Ramanuja was so compassionate, he was so forgiving, he is willing to forgive even someone who tried to kill him. And it reminds me of the pastime in the Ramayana. As we all know, in the Ramayana, Kaikeyi was the number, was of course, under the influence of Mantara. She was the one that convinced King Dasarath to send Rama into exile for 14 years. So after Ravana was killed on the battlefield of Lanka, Lord Brahma and the demigods appeared on the battlefield, and along with King Dasarath, who had died 14 years earlier. But he returned to the battlefield in his celestial form. And Lord Ram went before him and he asked him, and he bowed. And King Dasarath asked Ram, he said, "My dear son, now that you've achieved what I always wished that you could achieve, now that you'll be king of Ayodhya, I want you to take a benediction from me." And you know what the benediction was? Ram said, "My dear father, please forgive Kaikeyi." So this is the amazing, the depth of the compassion and the love in the heart of the Lord. You know, such mercy. I'll just end in just a few minutes here. Just make a few more comments. Arjuna, in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he prays to Krishna. He says, "My dear Lord, O infallible Lord," says, "You are the supreme person to be worshipped by all living beings. Please forgive me for the wrongs that I've done, and please bear with me as a father with his son, as a friend with his friend, as a lover with his beloved." This is found in the 11th chapter, text 44. So, in our personal dealings, Krishna is always going to be giving us an opportunity to forgive. And this forgiveness is like a muscle. The more we exercise it, the more powerful it becomes. And the more it increases, it creates an atmosphere in the heart, an environment in the heart, whereby the flower of bhakti can grow and become strong. So I'd like to thank everyone for your presence, your association. And would anyone like to make any comments, or if we have a microphone, we could like to hear from all of you. Since we're a small group today, it's nice to get to know each other. I know Patita Bhavana, but I've not met any of you. Oh, Hare Krishna. Oh, Mother Kalindi, Hare Krishna. Kala Chanti Dasi, Mother Kunti, and Mother Kalindi. All K's, right? Okay. And I'm Kripa Maya, so that makes one again. Sure, yeah, that'll be fine. Yeah. Right. So the question that Mother Kunti is asking is that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that if we chant the Lord's holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Dama, Hare Dama, Dama Dama, Hare Hare, with love, sincerely, with love and devotion, is that the same as personally engaging in the deity worship of the Lord? And to answer your question, I would like to refer to there in Sharanagati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, has a beautiful statement about the holy name. I can't remember it word for word, but I'll try to repeat it to the best of my poor memory here. He says that there is no vow like the chanting of the holy name. There is no austerity, no penance. Nothing is as powerful as the holy name. The holy name has personally appeared for the benefit of the living beings. It is the pinnacle of devotion. It is the heart's joyous proclivity and the best means of service to the Supreme Lord. So, to answer your question, yes. An emphatic yes. That Yeah. Thank you for the question. My name is Kripa Maya Das. Also, I'm trying to be Srila Prabhupada. Yes.
Where have you done most of your service?
Mostly, well, I started out serving in Brooklyn Temple. That's where I met Chakri Babu. And then I later served in the Buffalo Temple, and after it closed, we went to Columbus and then to New Vrindavan. I came to New Vrindavan in 1979. But I started my spiritual journey with the devotees in 1971. Actually, Wilmington, Delaware, there's a small temple there. And Wilmington, Delaware. In fact, if you go to Tamal Krishna Goswami's Samadhi in Vrindavan, there's a little sign there and it has a quote from a letter from Srila Prabhupada to Lalit Kumar, who was the temple president of the Wilmington Temple. And it's a famous quote about book distribution. I unfortunately, I can't remember it. Yes, it's a beautiful quote. So Lalit Kumar, when I remember my first joined the temple, first thing he said to me, he said, "If you get back to Godhead before I do, can you save me a place?" Such a sweet devotee. His wife was named Jambavati. And they also lived in New Vrindavan. Jambavati lived in New Vrindavan for a short time. But what's that? In New Vrindavan. Yeah, yeah. So I'm... Kripa means mercy. Maya means energy. So it's a servant of the merciful energy of the Lord. And my daughter is Krishna Priya. She teaches in the school here. Yes. Yes. Thank you. And it's a little bit interesting to know that actually the more we associate with devotees, the more we begin to realize that we do know each other, that we are friends, that we are actually part of a deep... Well, I think that's a special feature of Kala Chanji Dham, that the devotees are very, very warm and loving and affectionate. And I've noticed that it's very, very, very unique. I think that, you know, it's one of the greatest opulences here. In this temple, in this community. And may it continue and grow. And I'm glad to be here. Thank you. And thank you all. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.